Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
My next guest has had quite a year. In July, he fell off the wagon, hitting the headlines for all the wrong reasons. And then, in October, he claimed his fifth UK champion jockey's title at Ascot. Oisin Murphy, welcome.
Good morning, Brendan. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations. How did you celebrate?
I didn't celebrate. Very strange this year. I was riding in France the very next day and it was lovely. Lots of my family came over from Ireland to be there on the day, but I stayed away from the champagne bottles and they all had a good time, I think, in my absence.
Okay. When you won champion jockey the fourth time, you wrote, "How does that make me feel? To be honest, I don't feel anything. Not at the moment. I don't have time." Do you ever get to enjoy a win to relax and appreciate the moment, the good times?
I do my best to, but unfortunately, because it's every day and you're afraid to maybe look back on the good days you've had because you're already concerned about where's the next good horse going to come from or the next big day in the saddle. Remember, people have short memories, so I'm really aware that people don't care what I did last year, the year before, or even last month. I have to keep achieving.
So you've written this book, Sacrifice, A Year in the Life of a Champion Jockey. And even for people who aren't interested in racing, this is like, it's one of the best books I've read all year. Utterly compelling. It's such a weird life. Like, it's non-stop, isn't it?
Yeah, there are no kind of days off or off time. The season runs in Britain from the first weekend in May until the third Saturday in October. But when I'm not riding in England, I'm either in Ireland or France or anywhere else in the world. And yeah, there's no end to it. I suppose I'm lucky that over the past 2 years, I've been able to ride all over the world with some success. But it takes its toll. And, you know, I dreamt about being in this position as a child all the way through school. All I wanted to do was be a decent jockey, try to be one. And, you know, I'm lucky that I've got there. But, yeah, in the book, I suppose I go into detail in how I feel on a day-to-day basis. And maybe I complain a bit too much in it.
No. But the thing is, it's very clear, you're an intense individual anyway, aren't you? I think you feel in one way that a day off might be kind of a dangerous thing for you, that it suits you to be always going, does it?
Yeah, but I feel guilty. You know, if I spent a few hours on the sofa in the morning, there's so much I could be doing. And we don't need to remind ourselves that life is short, and I feel I have to make the most of the time. And certainly my career, I'm 30 now. And unlike Frankie Dettori and maybe Kieran Fallon, who went on into their 50s, I don't think it will happen that way for me. So
why?
I'd like to do other things. I'd like to show jump. I love going to the Dublin Horse Show and seeing the Aga Khan Nations Cup event. And I don't think I'd ever get to that level as a show jumper, but I'd like to try anyway.
Okay. It helps all this that you're incredibly competitive, aren't you? You almost to the point of it's kind of an addiction, winning.
Yeah, well, certainly when things are going well, you don't want them to stop, and you don't appreciate maybe the day-to-day winners. You know, I couldn't even remember at certain stages of the year if I had two or three winners yesterday, because they're all counting towards that jockey's championship. So really the end goal is just winning the championship, and whether that takes 120 or 160 winners along the way, it doesn't really matter.
So how does it feel when you win a race?
Maybe a little bit relieved. Maybe I was on the best horse and the horse was a short price favourite, and I know that people up and down Ireland and Britain have been betting on it, and there's an expectation for me to win.
That's all. Maybe a bit of relief.
Yeah, and you're thinking about the next one, and maybe you didn't ride the next one so well. So you get into the back of the car on the way home, and there isn't much good feeling.
And then the other thing is, you have very little perspective on life outside horses and racing? Do you, it's your whole world, is it?
I try to have some perspective. Obviously, I watch the news or listen to the news or catch up on things around the world on X. But you can become very self-centred and just concerned about what's happening on the race course and maybe off it, you know, horses picking up injuries. I can get very frustrated with maybe a horse not making a race or horses that get ill. They might be coughing in the lead up to Royal Ascot or a big international race. And these are all things that are out of my control. And I should probably learn to allow them to fly over my head.
Yeah.
But they have a direct influence on whether I can be successful in the saddle or not.
You say at one point in the book that the great jockeys are the ones who are great at compartmentalising. What does that mean? What does that look like?
I suppose no matter what's going on behind the scenes, obviously I've got it myself in a whole load of trouble over the past couple of years. When I'm cantering to the start, and from that time, I suppose, from the time I'm cantering to the start, I completely forget about everything apart from trying to win the race and how the horse is behaving and how can I give this horse the best possible chance, and everything else kind of goes out of my mind. And that's a nice way to be, I suppose, because for those few minutes, I have peace and tranquility, and I can try and face the headache again between races, or maybe, you know, it's constant. It has been constant, and it's my own doing. But it really doesn't help professional sportsmen or anyone who's trying to do their job well dealing with the background noise that they've created as well.
Yeah, yeah, but that you have created it yourself in a way. Yeah. When did drink become a problem for you?
I never drank as a teenager. My father and Aidan O'Brien, who maybe your listeners might be aware of, were very clever in the way that they taught me about maybe the issues surrounding alcohol, and they never said you couldn't drink, but I remember my dad going to Mass on a Sunday would give examples of how drink ruined people. And Aidan, when in the evenings when he'd be looking around the stables and chatting to me about how I'm riding or where I'm racing that weekend or whatever, I was only 15 and 16, made it quite clear about the pitfalls surrounding alcohol as well. And I probably noticed I was drinking too much in 2017, 2018. And
what did it look like? Sociable drinking?
No, a lot of it was at home. Whether things went badly or well that day at the races, I thought I would have a few drinks and it made me relax, or I thought it made me relax. And that became a habit, and it turned into a daily thing. And in 2021, I realised that my drinking was unmanageable, and I got some help. And I managed to stay sober all the way through 2022.
So you went to AA, but AA didn't really work for you at that point.
So it didn't work for me because I didn't want it to work. I held on to the idea that, yes, my drinking is unmanageable at the moment, but I'm going to learn to drink properly, like a gentleman.
Yeah.
And I gave about 18 months sober from the end of October 2021. All the way through to the middle of 2023.
You said counselling in the book, counselling helped you actually stay sober. Yeah?
Well, I had a great counsellor. I don't know if she's a counsellor or a therapist, but she was fantastic. She moved, I suppose she helped change my mindset, and she worked the schedule around my racing, and she just made it possible. And, you know, I left those conversations with her motivated not to pick up a drink all the time, but also
that was probably one of the few places you could be honest and vulnerable. Was it?
It was great when I was honest with her, but of course, when I started back drinking, I never told her, And that,
so you started back drinking with the plan that I'm going to do this like a gentleman now.
Yeah, that I'm going to have a few drinks in the evening, one or two beers or whatever. I switched my choice of drink as well. So before I would go for mainly vodka, maybe wine, maybe champagne, but never beers. They were, I don't know, I didn't like the taste, but also maybe they were too slow acting. And when I recurred in my alcoholic tendencies in 2023, I thought I'd just have a few beers, and that very quickly changed. I went back on the vodka and I stopped, and the whole way through 2024 I was sober.
Now, you got sober after a car accident in April, is that
so
right?
So if we go most recent, yeah. My drinking was again out of control in early 2025, and it was noticeable to people around me. And I started going to AA in February 2025, and I don't know if I was yet ready to hand it over again, to say to myself, I don't drink like a normal person. I still hung on to that idea that maybe one day I will be able to.
Yeah.
And in April, I thought I was having a normal evening, a few beers, went to watch the boxing, too many beers, and I crashed a car with a passenger in it. And, you know, I could have killed myself and that person. And went back into AA and told the people in there what I'd done. Most of them had already heard on the news. And it was...
That must be a bit of a wake-up call, is it? Like, I mean, on the scale of things now, not being judgy, but that's pretty stupid and irresponsible, like the fact that you could have killed yourself, someone else.
Yeah, well, it could have been life-changing, you know, and when I was arrested, being in that cell for a couple of hours, you know, that could have been me in a cell for the next 10 or 20 years, depending on the consequences of that crash. So if there was ever a wake-up call and a chance, and a second chance or a third chance or a tenth chance to realise that drink and Oisin don't go well, it was then.
And how are you getting on now?
Very good.
Sober since April, yeah?
Yeah, very good. I can't say that every day is easy. I can say that... in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are other men and women like me, which is always a nice feeling that one isn't alone. And of course, you're full of self-loathing and hatred. I am anyway, for all the my actions, but the consequences of my actions. You know, it's a tough kind of roller coaster ride that does get a little bit easier if you don't pick up the bottle, you know.
Yeah, it sounds like your head is pretty relentless, like you're hard on yourself all the time, are you?
Yeah, I am. I judge myself every day, but it's normally my performance in the saddle that people notice. You know, when it came to the drinking, I suppose I, although I can't do anything about it now, but I'm disappointed in myself that I couldn't get to this stage, and I still have to work at it every day, but I didn't come to the conclusion fully that Oisin Murphy couldn't drink until I crashed that car in April, you know.
And are you at any kind of relative peace with yourself now, or is it still like torment all the time?
No, I am. I've made amends as much as I possibly can, and the program is working for me.
Okay.
But I suppose, Brendan, what is scary as well is, you know, no one with an addiction is ever safe. The moment they think that they've you know, because I'm living proof. I thought I cured myself of alcoholism, or whatever way you want to put it, of drinking too much, or just not being able to control their drinking. I convinced myself, that devil on my shoulder convinced myself, that I could drink again, and look where it brought me.
Is there a lot of drinking, mental health issues among jockeys?
There's publicised mental health issues that they're likely to suffer from depression, and obviously the fact that you're only as good as the horses you ride, and some weeks you're going to have fast horses to ride and others you're not. Of course, there's going to be a spiral of, you know, you're in a good mood and you feel like you're riding well, so you've got some sort of self-confidence, and then the very next week you have no confidence because you're not doing well, and you're being scrutinised obviously by the racing general public, the people betting on it, but also that self-scrutiny that probably is more hurtful than anything else. So I don't think there is an issue with drinking and drugging in the current jockey population in Europe, mainly Ireland, France and England, because we're tested so regularly. And there are organisations and people there to help us. They can only help if one really wants it.
But I think I do get a sense reading the book that you feel that the jockeys, you say you're a commodity who make other people lots of money for other people. You feel, and look, with good reason in your case at times, but that you get a hard time from people within the industry, from the racing press and social media, from punters and that, yeah?
Yeah, I suppose it's no different from footballers or tennis players or whatever sport they're in. You know, if you type in a Gaelic footballer or a Premier League striker's name into X after they've had a bad game, no doubt they're going to get abuse.
You type in your name?
Yeah, and it's a sickness.
Why?
I don't know. I like to see I like to see the negative comments and posts, and
you're kind of a masochist, are you?
Yeah, it's not the first time it's put to me, but and it's been put to me in such a way that I should stop doing it.
Yeah.
And of course I probably should, but it hasn't stopped me doing it. Yeah.
There's other aspects of the lifestyle that people be vaguely aware of as well, but that when you lay it out, like, it's kind of extraordinary. Explain wasting properly to people who mightn't understand.
So the first thing a jockey will do when they get out of bed in the morning is get on the weighing scales. And that will dictate how much water or how much food they can drink for until they're finished racing that day. And
you actually measure out your water.
Yeah, for example, you've a 330 milliliter bottle of water in front of you now. That's over a pound in weight if you were just to drink all that in one go. So if you get on the scales after drinking that, you're going to be a pound heavier. If I wake up 9 stone on a Monday morning and I've got 8 stone 10 at 1 p.m. that day, and I've got to ride horses out and I've got a million things to do on my phone and study for the races, I've got 4 pounds to lose. Firstly, I've got to concern myself with how I'm going to lose that 4 pounds. But then the mental side of it, well, I can't eat or drink anything. I might, you know, it's all well and good if you're riding in the first race, you've got that lightweight, you might be able to have a coffee and an electrolyte tablet for your next 5 rides. But sometimes you have that lightweight at the end of the day and it's not warm enough that you're going to lose anything in sweat through riding the horses.
Do guys wear sweatsuits on the way to the course sometimes?
So I tell you what's most dangerous now. We don't have saunas at the races anymore. So guys that are, and it's not as bad for me because I don't have to ride out every single morning. I can text the trainer and say, listen, Andrew, I can't show up this morning because I've got 8 stone 7 at York.
Okay.
And he'll say, that's no problem. But the guys maybe that aren't doing as well or aren't as privileged that they can just text the trainer and say, I'm a non-runner today, pal. They will have to wear a sweatsuit on the way to the races and they could be driving for 4 or 5 hours, depending, you know, where they're going that day. With the heating up, and you know, it is dangerous, and that's all because there's during COVID there was a removal of saunas, supposedly for our health benefits, but it doesn't take a genius to work out that sweating in a sauna at the races is much safer and probably much healthier than a guy or girl driving 4 hours in a sweatsuit.
it can't be good for your head or your mood if you're going around and trying to function. Are you dehydrated and hungry?
Most days.
Really?
Yeah, most days. And I wouldn't have it as bad as some guys, yeah. But the majority of the time you're watching what you eat and drink.
Are you hungry now?
Well, I didn't eat yet today, but it hasn't entered my brain until you said it.
Are you thirsty?
No, I've been drinking water, and my next racing schedule isn't until Saudi Arabia on the 4th and 5th of December. So this is holiday time for me.
Okay. Where's the joy in it all? It might be sounding a bit grim to people, yeah.
Yeah, there are certain days, like I think I had 3 four-timers in the last 6 weeks of the season, Kempton, Salisbury and Doncaster. And they weren't particularly big days racing. They were just ordinary days. But the moments where I feel like I've ridden well and I've given every horse that day the chance to win. And also the days where I've been in good humour. I haven't been sharp or short with anyone, you know, because no one needs a little upstart leprechaun like myself to be anything but kind to them. So, you know, when I get to the end of the day, I'm also thinking about how did I behave towards people that day, you know?
Yeah. You do say as well, you spend a lot of your time forcing yourself not to eat and drink, also forcing yourself to smile. Like you have to let no chink in the armour and kind of pretend to be in a good mood all the time, yeah?
Yeah, it's most difficult during those big meetings at Royal Ascot, York, Glorious Goodwood, Irish Champions Weekend, because the owners generally come racing, which isn't like that every other day. You know, they're working Monday to Friday, many of them. And, you know, they have expectations that their horses are going to perform and run well. And I may have been beaten on the first 4 favourites of the day, and I'm unhappy with the way I'm riding, so I'm not in good form with myself. But I've got to go out there, make an effort, tell them what my plan is, and really believe before I get on that horse that I can win and I'm going to give it every chance to win. And that can take a bit out of you when you know deep down that you know this horse is going to have lots to go right in order for it to win that race, or maybe something to go wrong for the opposition, you know, bad luck in running or whatever.
How are you feeling about having a bit of kind of time off now between now and Saudi? Like, does that make you nervous?
It hasn't done to this point because I've filled the time, really been very busy with hunting, show jumping, meeting people that I don't normally meet, signing the book, visiting my family. I was in Killarney for the weekend, so I saw my father and my grandmother and aunts and uncles. That was all very nice. And that's kind of a safe zone. I suppose around Christmas, I've actually planned to spend this Christmas in Ireland, but I don't feel so comfortable, almost like not celebrating winning the Jockeys Championship or turning 30 this year. I'm less comfortable maybe with the idea of Christmas and New Year.
You'll keep busy, yeah?
Yeah. And maybe that's when I'm happiest as well. You know, I love riding horses every day. That gives me a reason to get up out of bed and it gives me some pleasure. You know, I was riding on the beach back in Inch, County Kerry on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And it was freezing cold, but I went with my cousin Claudia and we spent an hour and a half just messing around on the beach, trotting in and out of the waves and on the sand dunes. And, you know, that's those simple things in life I've learned to appreciate rather than drinking a bottle of vodka on the sofa, watching a film that I've seen 50 times before.
Hating yourself?
Well, initially hating myself. Then maybe between the 6th and the 10th drink, loving myself. And then the next morning, really hating myself. Yeah. That's the process, Brendan.
Yeah. Do you ever go on holidays?
I have been all over the world, obviously, for my job. I'm trying to think if I've been on holidays this year. No, I haven't. I went on a working holiday to South Africa last January, to Cape Town, and I'm going on another one this year. They have a big race day. And in December, I'm riding in Saudi, Hong Kong and Mumbai, the first 3 weekends. So they're all like mini holidays. I think the most I'm in any country is about 48 hours. But that suits me as well, because with the time zone, if you try and do longer stints, the jet lag affects you, whereas if you just go in and out. I actually went to Australia as a racing fan during one of my suspensions in 2022. Yeah. I went over there for the Melbourne Cup, a bit like Willie Mullins, but I didn't have a runner. And I just went there to see what it was like. And I went and I did it sober. And it was great because I was able to remember meeting people and and remember the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is with drinking heavily, it really affects a person's memory. So even if we had this conversation sober, you know, there have been periods of my career I couldn't remember what we discussed because I damaged my memory that much.
So it's like it never happened.
Yeah, but fortunately, and I noticed my first few times of rounds of sobriety, let's call it, and certainly this time, that the brain has an incredible way of healing. And, you know, I'm much sharper now than I was 12 months ago.
Are you fairly, confident is too strong a word for it. Like, are you fairly determined that you're done with the drink now?
I'm certainly determined. I'm definitely not confident. You know, you see through going to meetings and whatever that there are men and women that have been sober for many years and they relapse. And, you know, I was in a meeting on Monday and there were three gentlemen coming back from a relapse. So, no, it would be very silly to think that I don't have to work at it and keep going to meetings.
I'd say that keeps you very humble, does it?
Well, I never felt like I have an ego, although if you were to type my name into Twitter sometimes, many people don't agree. But I'm humble knowing the fact that I can ruin my life, you know, with a glass in hand.
So how long do you reckon you've left in you? How's your body holding up?
I was very lucky with injuries, touch wood. The day I stopped riding at a high level is the day I'll have to stop. I'll just have to bow out. I never thought I'd probably be able to, you know, win 5 jockeys championships. Of course, there are some famous Irish jockeys like Pat Edry and Kieran Fallon that managed to win many more than I've done. So, and you know, I'd love to follow in their footsteps.
Are you going to go for it again? Yeah.
Well, I didn't kind of sign up for it last year, but I must. I mean, I don't really have any excuse.
You were determined not to do it last year. I think is how I understood it in the book.
Yeah, but in the build up in 2024, I had to do it because I missed all of 2023. But remember, the end of 2024, when I'm finishing that book, I'm also thinking that I can drink like a gentleman again.
Yeah.
You know, so okay. I'm thinking the Jockeys Championship might get in the way of my drinking. Whereas now I don't really have any excuse. I don't have social things that I must attend. In fact, I, you know, as you can imagine, I avoid many of them. And there's maybe nothing stopping me as long as I stay suspension free. They can have a huge impact in your season, you know.
Yeah.
In 2023, for example, I missed 40 days through careless riding and whip suspensions.
Tell me about the cocaine
suspension. So in 2021, in 2020, I was riding in France. And this is an interesting story, actually, because I think it was 10 years to the day that Kieran Fallon failed a drug test on a horse called My Boy Charlie at the same race course. So I pitch up there riding a horse called Positive for Clive Cox. And I don't think anything of it. We're basically tested every Sunday in France. And I arrived there, ride the horse, didn't win any races. 2 months later, my sister Blohina sat at home in Lambourne And she sends through a screenshot of this letter from Franz Gallo. I read this letter and I knew straight away that there was a problem. So that evening I called the PGA and I called Sheikh Fahd and Andrew Balding and all the people that kind of employ me, and told them that I've received this letter for failing drug tests in France for metabolites of cocaine, and organised a hair test. Hair test is negative, so that covers 3 months. So this would cover the period of my failed test in France. So they're all fine with that. It goes to a hearing in France a few months later. They accept my testimony that I definitely didn't take cocaine because there's no levels in my hair. And they accept that it was transmitted to me and through a second party. So I'd slept with someone that had been on the gear the night before. They still suspend me for 3 months. And at the time, that was kind of the, you know, a lot of bad press. I thought that was maybe the worst thing that was going to happen in my career. But as the subsequent years have proved, that was only maybe the very beginning. And I've managed to get myself in a whole lot of trouble since then.
Yeah. Listen, just before we leave it, now that you've mentioned sleeping with somebody, is there any room for relationships in this life?
I had a very good relationship for 4 years with a girl called Lizzie Nielsen. And we parted ways, but we're still very friendly. At the moment, there isn't room. I think it's not encouraged when you're new into recovery, to try and juggle that with a relationship.
Yeah. And don't be hooking up with anyone at the meetings, apparently.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, you know about this, Brendan. Yeah. So, no, hopefully I'll find another one, but I don't know who'll have me at the moment.
Okay. Listen, for a complete lunatic, you have your head very well screwed on. You're so bright and articulate, and it's a really terrific book. It's called Sacrifice, A Year in the Life of a Champion Jockey, and it's published by Penguin. Oisin Murphy, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Brendan.
Email brendan@rte.ie.